from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Hundreds of thousands of Californians will lose their unemployment benefits unless Congress decides to extend federal benefits. Last week, a test vote for benefits extension failed in the U.S. Senate, and a similar bill failed just yesterday in the House of Representatives. What will happen if benefits are not extended? And what about those whose eligibility time has run out? We'll focus in the hour ahead on unemployment benefits and the prospects of their being extended in a time of high unemployment rates, economic woes, and a strong national Republican bloc opposed to benefits extension. Forum is next up with your calls, your emails, and your online questions and comments right here after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Benefit checks to 250,000 Californians have stopped during this period of record duration and joblessness, and typical benefits are for 26 weeks. Last week, the Senate and yesterday the House of Representatives, there was legislation introduced to extend benefits to the end of November to a maximum of 99 weeks, rejected by a unified bloc of Republican legislators, opposed in large part to adding to the large national deficit. Many lost jobs will not return, and some economists, like New York Times editorial Paul Krugman, believe we have already moved into a depression economy. This opening forum hour, we want to focus on the growing crisis of unemployment benefits and what can be done about them. Tom Abadi is here with us in studios. He's a staff writer who covers economics for the San Francisco Chronicle. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
Also glad to have with us here in studio Jeffrey Jones, who's assistant director and research fellow with the Hoover Institution, specializing in welfare policy, workforce investment policy, and American values and culture. Welcome, Jeffrey Jones.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. We'll also say good morning to Michael Burnick, and he's an attorney with the Sedgwick Law Firm in San Francisco, formerly director of the California Employment Development Department between 1999 and 2004, and a research fellow at the Milken Institute. Welcome, Mike Burnick.
Thank you.
We are also going to be talking to some other people in the course of the hour, and I will introduce them to you. But I want to go to Tom Abadi first, and just talking about the historical perspective here a little bit before we went on the air, and how you have to kind of divide, as Tom Abadi sees it, and I think he's right on this, from World War II to 1990, and then the dawn of globalization from 1990 on, along with the internet and along with the recession. And so we're in a different world literally now as far as unemployment.
We absolutely are. From World War II to 1990, we had many downturns. 73 and 80 were particularly severe, but they had a characteristic. The country overspent. It corrected itself. Manufacturing employment dipped. People got laid off. Things got better. They got called back. 1990, the world flipped a switch, and it's been slowly coming and it's gathering in force. Several things happened. You had both the Soviet bloc, the former Soviet bloc, and China begin to join the world workforce, which a Harvard economist calls the Great Doubling. Suddenly, you had 1.5 billion people working. Now you had almost 2.5 billion people working. At the same time, the rise of the internet made it possible to shift all sorts of new types of work abroad. And now here we have the recession. As a result, each of the recessions since 1990, job growth has been slower than in the United States at any rate. I bet you if you looked at a global scale, Michael, you'd see that the factories started coming back just like it used to be, but the factories are now in Asia. Doesn't help us.
Well, nor does all the outsourcing, nor does the fact that there doesn't seem to be a safety net for all those who are unemployed in this country now.
Well, the safety net is in fact been extended, and that's the whole debate now. The question is whether a safety net that was contrived in the world of the 1930s, in the world when industrial production went down and then it came back and you got your job back, whether that safety net is now appropriate and how to fix it.
Let's get a picture from you, just an overview, Tom. And when I say the safety net is not available, I mean to so many people whose benefits have stopped, and if the Fed doesn't come through with extending their benefits, they're really out of it as far as how to pay their rent. In fact, we're going to hear from somebody who's unemployed in the course of this hour and who is facing that situation. Benefits stopped, don't know if any more benefits are going to come. She doesn't want to use her real name because afraid that her landlord will find out who she is and that she's unemployed. I mean, this is a situation that's really become very grave for many people.
There are people being ground into poverty who never thought that they would be there. We hear this from the shelters that we talk to, homeless shelters that are seeing first-time homeless people, people who had not been in the system, so to speak. And, you know, we had been living paycheck to paycheck. Americans, by and large, have been living paycheck to paycheck. And when the paychecks have stopped, and now when the unemployment stops, we are in fact being forced down the economic ladder rather than up the economic ladder. This is an inexorable force. The only question being, how can the government help us? To what extent should it help us? To what extent do we just have to suck it up and live with less?
Now, that, I agree, is a central question. That's what we're going to deal with this hour, among other questions. When you did your excellent profile of what's happening in the world of unemployment and unemployment benefits, though, you profiled some people who are out of work, and I was maybe not entirely surprised, but a little bit jolted by the fact that a lot of the response you got said, you know, what's the matter with these people? Why don't they get jobs? That kind of attitude.
You know, it has been a great disappointment to me to see the tenor and the viciousness of comments on the internet, to the point where I now routinely warn what I call civilians, that is, people who are not accustomed to being in the public arena, that when I bring them into the public arena, they're going to get this negative feedback. I believe that it's partly the culture of anonymity, where you can say things about people from some pseudonym like dog eats cat and nobody knows who you are. And I think partly one of the people I've profiled in the past emailed me after this second profile, and she said that people are afraid, and they're afraid that this could happen to them. And so rather than think about how constructively to do that, they attack the other person. They figure the other person must have done something to deserve this. I don't know that that's the case.
Well, let's talk about a couple realities here now, because I said this is the longest duration of joblessness that this country has seen in a long, long time. And the fact is that there's anemic job growth. So statistically, one job for every five people who are unemployed. So you've got that. You also have the reality that when you have these unemployment benefits, they actually boost the economy.
It's enormously true. The average check is, I think Lori Levy is going to be on a little later. She can correct me if I'm wrong. Something about a little over $300. So if you take $300 times 250,000 people and you start multiplying that out over the course of weeks to come, you realize that this is a real prop for the California economy. You're talking about food. You're talking about bus trips. You're talking about rent. And, you know, basic, if you withdraw that money from the economy, that is a destimulative effect at a wrong time.
Tom Abadi here with us in studio as a staff writer who covers economics for the San Francisco Chronicle. And Jeffrey Jones, assistant director and research fellow with the Hoover Institution. They specialize in welfare policy. And I want to get a kind of conservative view from you, Jeff. You prefer Jeff or Jeffrey?
Jeff is fine.
Jeff, the benefits, from your perspective, people have gone four or five times to the mat on this already.
Yeah, I think it's not a question of whether or not the benefits are useful to individuals who are unemployed and serve a vital purpose to helping them to maintain consumption and maintain their a normal standard of living, if it's maybe a little bit less than what they were making when they were employed. But, you know, this has now gone on since June of 2008 was when the first extension to unemployment benefits was passed. And it's just coming to a head now in terms of, can we continue to invest in a program that is mostly focused on just helping people get by? And instead, maybe we should turn our focus to the real root of the problem, which is the lack of job growth, which is what you mentioned. And so I think we just need to switch our focus. And I don't mean that we need to completely cut off the emergency unemployment benefits, but we certainly need to think about scaling them back.
Well, you also feel pretty strongly that we need to think about people changing careers too, and not just waiting for a job that maybe they're trained to do to come, because it's not necessarily going to come.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of times when you have the debate about, you know, right now, should we extend unemployment benefits? People are thinking about the near term. They're thinking about that $300 a week that people receive. But you also have to consider the long-term impact on the unemployed, on someone who is out of work. If they really stay off employment for 2 years, then they're going to experience some significant setbacks to their ability to get a job. And some of those include the fact that they may be waiting around for a job that in their particular field of study or their field of expertise that is now not going to be there when their unemployment benefits expire. So in that sense, you've just delayed the inevitable. And so I think we need to really do as much as we can to encourage people to spend the time that they are on unemployment looking at whether or not the job is going to be there when they get off, and instead trying to find a new position that they can retrain into.
Now, we are going to hear, of course, from Mike Burnick, who thinks the whole system needs an overhaul, not only for those who are out of work, but for the employers. And we are going to hear from Lori Levy, who Tom Abadi mentioned, who's Deputy Director of Public Affairs with the California Employment Development Department. But first, I want to go to a woman named Marie, who is unemployed, and her unemployment benefits will end at the beginning of August. Again, she's not using her real name because her landlord doesn't know she's unemployed. Marie, welcome to the program. Good to have you.
Hi.
Well, when you hear about the necessity of maybe finding or changing a career, I mean, you actually have a doctorate in law, am I correct?
Yes.
And you have been...
Among other advanced degrees.
And you've had gainful employment, and now you suddenly find yourself out of any kind of employment whatsoever and looking at the prospects of not being able to pay your rent?
Correct.
And you also lost your health care because of a pre-existing condition, am I correct?
Correct.
So when you hear, for example, okay, go out and get another kind of job, find something, you say what?
I get dressed, I get my stuff off my resume, I go out and I try to find something. But because I'm over 55, they pretty much don't have a job for me. I've heard it with code words like, well, we're actually looking for someone with a lot more pep. Or we're looking for someone, this is a job for a real go-getter. And that's very disconcerting.
It's disconcerting also because you have no arrests, you have had no problems with drugs, you have no children, you're not a victim, and you're not a victim of a violent crime, and therefore there are jobs that you can't get because of those things on your resume, so to speak, or the things that are not on your resume.
Well, that was the thing that really amazed me. As I started spiraling down farther and farther, I thought, well, I'll just go get a lifeline, which is my county. And I looked at programs that they had, and I found one. And I started to fill out the application for assistance, which actually would have put me back into a job. And I found out that, gee, I don't have any kids, and that was the deal breaker. For some of the other ones, the people in the center told me, well, you're very well educated. I don't think we really need to help you. You should be able to get one on your own. And I thought, well, yeah, it was true that we didn't discriminate against people for their age.
Well, unfortunately, what you're describing probably is a form of discrimination that can be fairly well concealed. Are you looking at the prospect of being homeless now?
I don't know. I really don't know. That certainly is something that has concerned me. And I guess what's even more chilling is that in the course of my travels, I've noted when I went to one center, I noticed a woman of color, who was very well-dressed, well-spoken, but she came in with all of her belongings in suitcases, pull-along suitcases, and I realized that she was homeless.
Well, you were getting $1,400 a month.
Yes.
And your last payment will be the first week in August.
That's correct.
All I can do at this point is wish you good luck and hope that you find something between now and then, and in fact... I'll even invite people to, if you'll leave us your phone number, I'll invite people to give us a call. If they have a job that they know about that really might fit your background, we'd like to maybe help in any way we can. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
And thank you for joining us. Not necessarily an unusual story, Lori Levy, huh? Let's bring you into this.
Yeah. Well, thanks. It's good to be here this morning. No, not unusual at all. We've talked to many people through the course of this recession who have really encountered great difficulties. In fact, we have almost 42% of all those unemployed who have been unemployed for 27 weeks or longer in this economy. So it has truly been very difficult out there, and it's stricken many people of all kinds of different skills.
And again, Lori Levy is with us from Sacramento, and she's Deputy Director of the Public Affairs Branch for the California Employment Development Department. A lot of these people can't even get through to your department, from what I understand. Is that correct?
Well, it has been extremely difficult. It's an unprecedented demand we've seen at the Employment Development Department with the need for benefits and so forth. In fact, we paid out a record $20.9 billion in unemployment benefits in 2009. The previous annual record was $8.1 billion. So huge, unprecedented demand, and it's been very, I think, helpful for the economy out there. And gratefully, we've been able to get some further funding from the federal government and have been able to hire. And today I'm happy to report we have more than 1,000 new employees in our unemployment insurance program trained and actually helping us become much more efficient in handling those calls.
So can you say with some confidence that if people call, they can get through and you can accommodate at least providing some counsel for them?
I think so. And we've also done a lot more, too, to really help bring people more information online. We're able to have an ability where people can submit questions to us online, and we can get back to you within a couple of days. And otherwise, we do also have some information on the front page of our website, constantly keeping this federal extension issue updated so people know the very latest information and they can plan accordingly.
Can you give your online address and also your phone number, if you would be so kind?
Oh, absolutely. It is www.edd.ca.gov, and what you'll find there is, like I said, the very latest information about the federal extensions. You'll see an easy click there to all the different phone numbers we have in English, Spanish, and several other languages. And then we also have the Ask EDD button there where you can submit your online questions to us, and we can respond to you within a few days.
Well, just yesterday, Harry Reid, Senator Harry Reid from Nevada, introduced a revised piece of legislation and began steps required to hold a vote later this week. However, we're hearing from the Republican leadership, of course, Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, that there's little chance of this bill going through. If there isn't an extension, what do you foresee?
Well, that's a good question, because they have done little short-term extensions on the extension benefits three times already, since January of 2010. But at this point in time, if there is no further action taken, all of our 1.5 million people currently certifying for benefits will see a shortened duration of benefits available to them. It all depends how quickly they may encounter the end to their current benefits. All really depends on how long they've been unemployed and where they are in their claim. Right now in California, we have around 260,000 people who are already feeling disruptions in benefits, and that number will grow every week we go here without further congressional action.
So most Californians who are on benefits are at risk of losing those benefits?
Yes, it all depends. I mean, you know, the extension benefits brought the maximum total benefits to 99 weeks. And it's up to Congress to decide how long those extension benefits should be here. They'll have to end at some point. It's whether it's now or later. And if they do end, then we go back to the maximum total amount of benefits being 26 weeks, and that's in a regular unemployment insurance claim. So, you know, for most people, if you're somewhere in the middle of your regular claim or in the middle of one of those four tiers of extension benefits, you can continue to collect on the balance of that current claim. We can't bring you into any further extension benefits. But if you're toward the end, like if you're 24 weeks into a regular 26-week claim, you got maybe 2 weeks of benefits still coming to you. But at this point in time, we can't get any further extension benefits to you. So it all kind of depends on how long you've been unemployed.
Lori Levy, again with us from Sacramento, is Deputy Director of the Public Affairs Branch for the California Employment Development Department. Thank you for joining us, Lori Levy.
Well, thank you. My pleasure.
And again, we will post the website for those of you who want to communicate and get information on our website. Michael Burnick, also with us, attorney for the Sedgwick Law Firm and former director of the California Employment Development Department. And Mike Burnett, as I said earlier, you think the whole system needs an overhaul.
Well, I do. I've been involved since the late 70s. And let me say, there is a literature, by the way, a vast literature, research literature, in terms of the disincentive effect of unemployment insurance. And it's true, in normal times, it does have some disincentive effect. But I volunteer today with a number of community job train groups, just with job seekers. And given the lack of jobs, I mean, I think there are a lot of things that we need to cut. Unemployment is the last thing we need to cut. I don't see a disincentive effect clearly. And
we did a program, by the way, on what news is very hard to swallow or listen to or see on television and so forth. And a lot of young callers said just don't want to hear these unemployment because it gets me too discouraged. I go out there and I pound the pavement and, you know, think that maybe something will come up.
They're right. You never know. It is the in the 30 years I've been involved, it's clearly a recession in its severity that we've never encountered, and certainly in California since World War II. On the other hand, there are jobs out there in the terms of both I encourage people to go out and try to create jobs, not wait for job openings. But
You say that the system discourages job creation. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think it doesn't work for workers today. The whole unemployment insurance system, as Tom mentioned, it's a remnant of the 1930s. It doesn't work for workers in terms of accessing, in terms of reemployment. And it doesn't work for employers in California. The costs, even though formally the costs have not been raised, the cost, the way the UI system works, the costs have been going up for employers. And one of the dynamics we've seen in California over the past 40 years is this movement away from the employer-employer, away from hiring, to the use of independent contractors, to the use of other forms of contingent employment. In other words, employers more and more have a choice. Are they going to hire someone? And when you start raising costs of unemployment insurance, you start raising workers' comp, you raise these other costs, it discourages hiring. So yeah, I think it doesn't work for employers, and it definitely doesn't work for workers.
What about the proposal, Tom Abadi? We're talking about $30 billion if this was to be extended for 99 weeks, at least that's the estimate. You could shut off pay increases for federal civilian employees and you'd have it. That's one proposal, at least.
Well, you know, it is clear to me that this is a solvable short-term problem, and there just simply is not the unanimity or the willingness in the Congress for the two sides to listen to one another. For instance, the proposal that you mentioned came from the Committee for a Responsible Budget. It's a nonpartisan think tank. They're looking not just at the short term but at the long term, and they're saying, come on, guys, you know, if we just cut $33 billion of future payments to federal employees, they're not going to be homeless, and we'll not have increased the federal deficit. Now, why aren't the Democrats listening to that? I don't know. On the other hand, why has not Mitch McConnell stepped forward and said, hey, listen, we have a very popular proposal. We're going to put this money back into the economy. We're going to give it to these workers. And by the way, what we're going to do is we're going to take a percent away in a pay raise from federal employees in the future. We've got 40 votes. We're looking for 11 more. Why haven't they done that?
Well, part There's of the no concern, excuse. I suppose, maybe we can get back to you, Jeff Jones, the concern that you're offering emergency money on a kind of de facto basis. And as you've pointed out, you're giving people a long time in terms of their resume with something like 99 weeks out of work.
Yeah, certainly. And we just, you know, I think when it comes to the deficit, there's a lot of different proposals. And I do think now that it's crunch time and this concept of people of unemployment benefits expiring is starting to bring out some interesting solutions. One of them, Scott Brown, the senator from Massachusetts, just introduced this morning a fiscally responsible relief act in which he's proposing, rather than, you know, the idea of, you know, cutting federal employees' compensation, instead there's apparently $35 billion in unspent federal stimulus money that could be used to extend benefits.
Certainly, Republicans are saying largely the stimulus money should pay for this. The question is, the central question before you, our listeners, that we heard from Tom Abadi later, is what about federal extensions? Are they necessary? Are they vital? Do they need to keep people from, well, the poorhouse, as we used to say? Our toll-free number is available to you. Please feel free to join us. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome your calls. Again, toll-free, 866-733-6786, or send an email to forum@kqed.org. I'm Michael Kresge. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and according to the State Department of Employment Development, over 200,000 Californians are at risk of losing their extended unemployment benefits, just as both chambers of Congress are considering measures to preserve through November the extended benefits. Tom Abadi with us in studio is a staff writer who covers economics and has been covering the story for the San Francisco Chronicle. Jeffrey Jones is assistant director and research fellow with the Hoover Institution, and Michael Burnick is an attorney with the Sedgwick Law Firm and a research fellow at the Milken Institute. We also spoke earlier with a woman named Marie, an unemployed woman whose benefits will end at the beginning of August, and with Lori Levy, who is Deputy Director of the Public Affairs Branch with the California Employment Development department, we were saying off air that the real key to this whole problem, as far as any kind of solution, is job creation. And Mike Burnick, we're saying, where are all the green jobs that the Obama administration promised us?
Well, the number of green jobs is tiny today, though I do think it is the future. It is something, especially in California, we need to be investing in. So the number is very small now, but I think it is a one of the promising lines of investment.
But it does boil down to a problem that's only solution lies in the possibility of job creation. But now with all the outsourcing and the globalization and the kind of historical perspective, Tom Abadi, you gave us at the top, things are looking more grim.
Well, you know, I was listening to your caller, Marie, earlier. She talked about having an advanced law degree. I don't know if that's a practicing attorney or a teacher, but in any event, it reminded me that one of the people I've profiled earlier in a similar story was an attorney, a younger woman in this case, but she had children, so she had different challenges. She just emailed me the other day after seeing this latest story and said that she was delighted to have a part-time job at a gift shop making $9 an hour, and her biggest problem was convincing them that even though she had this law degree and this great overqualification, they should give her this. There are people out there who are they're beating their heads against a sharp rock to find jobs, and the disincentive effect does not persuade me. What I see happening to the people who are out there on the streets right now frightens me to my core. I'm 55 and I'm in a declining industry, and I wonder, when am I going to get into the back of my pickup truck with my green machine and go door to door trying to cut people's lawns in order to pay my bills?
I would just say I agree with Tom. It's by far a whole different recession than we've seen. But I was involved in job training in the recession of the 80s and the 90s. And in both cases, during the time of the recession, things looked hopeless. There was a lot of talk about the structural changes in the California and American economy, that jobs were never going to come back, that we were looking at automation was leading us to permanent unemployment. And both in the 80s and in the 90s, we did lose a lot of jobs that never came back. But other jobs emerged and emerged in greater numbers, and unemployment went down. So I think we don't know what the future is going to be. But I think if we look at the past two recessions, it gives us some hope. Certainly at the time, it looked
you don't
like,
think Jeremy Rifkin was a prophet when he said
well, he turned out to be wrong.
The internet would replace so many jobs.
His book, The End of Work in 1999, predicted that we were that the notion of a job was changing, that automation, technology, and globalization was going to be eliminating jobs. In fact, over the next decade, from 96 to 2006, we created more jobs than ever before.
Jeffrey Jones.
I agree with Michael. I think that, you know, our focus needs to now be on creating jobs. And we need to, you know, the problem is that it's not really the federal government's job, nor are they equipped to actually create jobs. I mean, they can expand public employees hiring, but that's not going to do anything. We really need to get small employers, medium-sized employers to start hiring again. And there are proven economic steps we can take as a country that the government can do to encourage private enterprise. That includes something like the Hiring Incentives to Restore Employment Act that was passed recently that essentially exempts employers of having to pay Social Security benefits and also provides a tax credit if they hire somebody who's been unemployed for more than 60 days.
But if the jobs aren't there, Jeff, isn't it and you say it's sort of maybe harmful for individuals to receive de facto all these payments from the government. At the same time, you have to face the fact the jobs aren't there.
Right, which is why you have to encourage employers. You have to give them incentives to start hiring. And that's really the appropriate role that the government can start playing now. And as we scale back the unemployment benefits, that has to go hand in hand, tandem with efforts by the government to encourage more growth in jobs in the private sector.
All right, let me go to our sector of listeners and find out what's on your minds with questions and comments. Susan, hi, you're on.
This is Susan. Can you hear me out there?
Yeah, we can hear you. Go ahead.
I am self-employed and have not taken any payroll for 2 months and foresee that it's going to be another 4 months before I'm going to be able to at least. I've never filed for unemployment, and I'm really not for having the government extend the unemployment. And the reason is that I think that we're a little bit entitled in this country, and I think we have to learn how to figure it out instead of depending on the government to do it. And, I mean, if I go another 4 months and I'm not able to take a payroll, I'm going to drastically change what I do. And I know there's jobs out there. I'm a business owner, but I'm willing to do anything to put food on my table. And I'm over 55, so I have the same problem as some of your callers. I just think that we have to get out of this mentality of being entitled.
Tom Abadi, thank you for that call, Susan. It always comes up that not only can people perhaps look for something less, you talked about a gift shop job, you know, maybe look for something different than what they'd been doing as opposed to the expectation or maybe some would even say the entitlement of continuing in the job that they had been doing or that type of work.
Well, I completely agree that there are many ways and many, many people find their way through. Let me tell you some things other than support that government should be doing for us but isn't. We live in a world where work is changing and where we have to keep our skills up constantly. So that would mean greater access to public education and to community colleges and retraining programs. Oh, wait, we just cut access to all of those things here in California due to past difficulties. Not only would it have been great for those programs to be existing, but they're not attuned to the needs of workers. Let's say I'm in my 30s or 40s or 50s and I see the writing on the wall. I see that my machine press job is going to be a thing of the past and I want to get training. The school system is not set up right now to give me training in a 3-month, 4-month, 5-month extended session or on weekends. The whole system works against people who want to help themselves. Now, yes, can you do it despite that? Yes.
You're shaking your head, Mike Burney?
Well, I am. We have actually built up in California a fairly efficient workforce system. I think NUMMI is a good example. There's a lot of money going into NUMMI. There are a lot of retraining programs. I know 4 or 5 different programs that are working with the Alameda County Workforce Investment Board to retrain workers. The problem, I think, Tom, is not the fact that there's not a workforce infrastructure or that it's not connected to jobs. It's that the number of these jobs is still very small. So, for example, there's a retraining program to take some of the NUMMI workers and retrain them to be transportation engineers. It's a good program. But the number of jobs, it's a niche program. It can take maybe 10 to 20 people a year. There's another program to train people in these green jobs in terms of weatherization and in terms of solar installation. Very good program, very tied to jobs, very strong nexus. But the number of places that they have is somewhere in the range of 30 to 40. So it's numbers. It's not so much the workforce system. You know, we've figured out how to do train, how to have that nexus of trained jobs. The number of job openings, though, for example, for the NUMMI workers who are being laid off, is still very modest.
Let me go to more of our calls. And Kevin, you're on. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. You're missing, or the media is missing, the urgency of this economic situation. Several areas are compounding to create an emergency I've never seen in my lifetime. Health insurance. Not only with the unemployment, but COBRA is ending also. That's the health insurance one pays for following a layoff. It's limited to 18 months. After the federal ARRA subsidy is applied, I paid $213 each month to continue my health insurance.
Let me just give you the footnote on that. The House actually took away 65% of the COBRA benefits. Then they put 25% back on, and then they took that away, just for the record.
Yeah. Right. Now, keep in mind that unemployment's ending. I can't even get the health insurance anymore because of the COBRA limit of 18 months. Even if I'm willing to pay the full $600 I'd have to pay. It's ended this month. I've got no health insurance now by operation of law. Where the hell is Congress? I mean, this is something that should be sounding the alarms. Combined with unemployment, it galls me when I hear people call in and say it's an entitlement, we're in an entitlement economy. What the hell are they doing? Eating cake with Marie Antoinette? I can't even get through to the EDD unemployment phone number from home. It is impossible. I urge anyone to try it. It can't be done. I had to go into the EDD office. and use their phones, calling repeatedly again and again, hanging up for 15 minutes to get through to someone.
Well, you heard Lori Levy say they have new personnel there. They've actually hired some
enough.
People.
It's a bunch of BS. They're covering their asses. They're not hiring enough people, Michael. As a voting Democrat who voted for our president and progressive Congress people, I'm aghast at the lack of action and concern, and I know that voting out the president do-nothing idiot sucking up the corporate money is going to get me even worse politicians. This doesn't help the unemployed. We need a massive program like CETA, the Comprehensive Employment and Training Act that existed in the 1970s, to get us past this horrible time. Combined with a credit squeeze and people who can't live off their credit cards anymore, we've got a real friggin' crisis. It's worse than it is today than it was a year ago.
All right, Kevin, I hear you, and I thank you. And Jeffrey Jones, you want to respond to Kevin?
Well, I mean, I think he certainly raises an interesting point, and it creates the contrast between the choice that we have right now. And the choice is we can continue to basically put the responsibility on government to cover the benefits, to cover the COBRA extensions, to help everyone who becomes unemployed. And this is at a time when the federal debt is already $13 trillion. The deficit is, 10%. Of GDP, and somehow we're going to be able as a nation to afford to create massive new government subsidies to continue to pay for people's, livelihood. And I think that, the alternative is we just need to think about, what's really going to create jobs for people? What is really going to help turn this economy around? And I think it's the private sector.
Here's a listener from Healdsburg, Benjamin, who says, I've worked in construction for 31 years and have survived numerous downturns. This downturn is different. It's longer. There is no end in sight, and the banks are not lending on new construction. What I'd like to know is, why do these deficit hawks cry about supporting the unemployed because it's too costly, but think nothing about spending trillions of dollars on foreign wars? I suspect it's going to get worse. That'll remain, I suppose, as a rhetorical question. But here's a question for you, Jeff, from a listener named John, who says, does Jeffrey Jones really believe that $300 a week is, quote, a little bit less than, say, the $1,800 a week that a laid-off engineer was earning? Is there any evidence that jobs are unfilled because overqualified people are refusing to take them?
I'm not making that argument. I'm making the argument that we've continued to expand unemployment and keep the extension going for 2 years now, and the question is, can we scale it back? Maybe the thing to do is we have 99 weeks, and that's what they're proposing to do is continue to extend it for an additional 99 weeks. Why don't we look at some kind of compromise that allows us to bring it back? The maximum previous benefit extension was 52 weeks before we started this system in 2008. So why don't we bring it back to something like 52 weeks of a total maximum unemployment benefits, and then we can start to see if that's going to have an impact of helping individuals to get out the door.
And more of your calls. We go to Bob. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you today? Okay. I'm just aghast at listening to some of these people talk about, how things, we went through a recession, before in the 80s and then the 90s. This is different. We just experienced a near bank collapse to zero. Businesses cannot borrow money to grow their businesses without being able to get the capital equipment they need. They can't really grow.
I don't want to sound like Cassandra here, but I mentioned in my introduction that Paul Krugman, who many people, of course, respect, New York Times op-ed columnist and economist, says we are in a depression, in a global depression. I mean, it's a word that one hesitates to use and one doesn't want to use because it casts a pall, but there you have it.
It's been my experience that there are a lot of really well-trained, college-educated people, and this is under-employed people that we should really be putting to work. In a situation where we're trying to compete with the rest of the world, there are plenty of things that need to be done. Why are we having these people underemployed, and why can't we get some of these businesses some money that are really, you're talking about security of this country, you need to get some money out there and to people doing things rather than the bankers who are investing in things.
All right, Bob, I thank you, and I'm going to look at some more emails here. Dory writes, I've been an independent contractor for 17 years and was laid off 2 years ago. I've applied for several jobs, and once I go through the interview, I'm suddenly overqualified. I'm 58 years old, and I am certain being overqualified is another term for you're too old. I've been selling off everything I own, declared bankruptcy, and I'm blessed with an understanding landlord who gives me a break on paying my rent late. Doug in Concord says, where's the jobs? After months of not looking for work and collecting unemployment again during my 2.5 years without work, I answered an ad on Craigslist. After a phone interview, I was told I was needed to work tomorrow and details would be worked out with the person in charge of the installation. This company installs equipment for AT&T as a subcontractor. After making plans with my wife and kids so I could go to work the next day, I was never called back like I was promised, dropped without any reason or effort by the company in need of workers. This level of offhanded disregard for people in the job search speaks volumes for the economy based on consumerism. It's insult to injury to know that all your adult life you've complained about the abuses of the wealthy and then you're so blithely cast aside while the wealthy prosper. The bank bailout says to me that the dollar is just monopoly money anyway, so why keep it flowing to the people who need it? Well, I just want to get a flavor in there of what some listeners are saying about their own personal plights, and let me go to Berkeley. Jody, hi.
Hi. I am one of the long-term unemployed people. I was laid off at the end of December 2008 and was able to extend the period of time during which I got unemployment benefits by taking some short-term contract work. My first extension ended on May 29th, which was the last day to qualify for the next extension, but that one turned out to only be 1 week. So since then, I haven't had any support at all. I have a PhD and I've only been out of grad school for a couple of years and decided not to pursue an academic career because I wanted to be more involved in solving real world problems. And here I sit, you know, within a couple of months, I'll have to declare bankruptcy and I won't have a place to live.
Do you have any ideas of what you can do at this point to secure employment? Any thinking outside the box type of ideas?
Or? Sure. I've applied for hundreds of jobs. It's not like I don't have any real, you know, any non-academic experience. I do. I do environmental work. That didn't go away. It's just that so much of that is supported by public funding that there are very few opportunities now. I've applied for all kinds of jobs outside of my field. I've applied for part-time work, full-time work, short-time work. You know, I get letters back saying, you have a very interesting resume, but we got over 200 applicants and we decided not to, you know, we selected people who were a closer fit for what we want.
Jody, I wish you good luck. I appreciate your call. Here's Simon from Berkeley who says, this conversation about unemployment benefits always drives me crazy because there are a huge number of unemployed who are not eligible for benefits. Either they had never had work, they had temporary work, or they moved and had to leave a job and are therefore not able to collect any benefits. And yet outlook for employment is just as grim. I think an important point. Gregory says, your guest that brought up the recent HIRE Act was breezed over, but that is a very, very important point. As a very small business person, the only reason I was able to hire someone was because of the employer-paid tax waiver created by this act. This means that when I cut an employee a paycheck for $600, it actually cost me around $650. Before this act, such a check could cost me more like $850. This HIRE Act means more employment dollars going to those who need it, but this act is poorly publicized. And please ask your guest to go into some greater detail. Jeff Jones?
Well, yeah, first of all, it's very small. So that's the first problem with it. I mean, I think your emailer definitely describes the benefit, which is that it allows employers who want to hire people to be able to hire them. It's an incentive to hire, essentially. And it's incentive specifically to hire individuals who have been unemployed for more than 60 days. And it does that by giving them an exemption to the Social Security payroll taxes that they have to pay. And it also provides a $1,000 tax credit at the end of the year if the person is remain employed with that employer.
Now, we're talking about changes in the law, and we have to bring in here Tom Abadi. It sounds like perhaps not a lot to many people, but there was this $25 weekly stimulus that was ended at the end of May.
Right. That's, again, part of the one of the several changes that were made to the unemployment benefit. That is going to go away, and it's going to decrease the amount of money that even if the – I'm not sure whether the restoration will restore that. If Congress extends the benefits, whether they will be restored.
But you think of people on a shoestring. I mean, $25 can go a long way.
$25 is probably 4 or 5 BART trips to a job interview. By the way, I want to add something to what Jeff said. I think that what he's talking about, the sort of direct subsidies to employers to hire jobless workers, is a great idea. It happens to be a Republican idea. The Democrats not necessarily listen to it all that well. They like to create programs. And so a lot of money gets put into the program before it gets trickled down to the people. This is a great idea. We need more of it. But what we need from the Republicans is not from them to sit on the sidelines and take pot shots, but from them to come forward and say, here's how we propose to lead you out of this. They haven't done that.
Michael Burnham.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's also important is that, as Tom said, this recession differs certainly its severity. It also is very different in the fact that it goes across occupations and across sectors. And I think when the story of this is written 10, 20 years and when it's written in California literature, it's really the story of what we've heard from your callers today and Marie and the others. It's expanded to the middle class. A middle class and upper middle class that, and especially in middle class and upper middle class over 40, that in previous recessions in the 80s and 90s weren't really hit. But that's the story of this recession. It's one that's hit.
Everybody's hit.
Everyone's
really
hit,
all
Michael.
Sectors, yeah.
But when we think of the depression and the grapes of wrath and the farm workers and we think of the recession of the 80s and 90s and the aerospace and defense workers. Today, it's across all sectors, across all occupations.
Not everyone is hit. I would dispute that. During the Great Depression, the financiers who created the bubble at least had the decency to jump out the windows, some of them. This time around, what they've done is they've awarded themselves fatter bonuses than before. I admire the private sector. It creates 80% of the jobs, 85% of the jobs in this country. But it was the private sector and its reckless behavior, particularly Wall Street and the banks, that brought the world to this. Nobody has gone to jail beyond Bernie Madoff. That angers me.
I know. I'm Jeffrey not going to defend the financiers and stuff, but I will say that, it's...
Well, they haven't been hit. They do have an exemption from this broad sweeping statement of everybody being hit. A lot of Wall Street hasn't been hit. A lot of the corporate oligarchy hasn't been hit.
Yeah, but the government is equally responsible for what has led to this... this most recent Great Recession, as people are calling it. You can look at the work of John Taylor, who's an economist at Stanford University and a senior fellow at Hoover, and he's clearly demonstrated that, it was the Fed and it was lax lending policies for housing that led to a massive bubble in the housing sector, which really is what precipitated the overall economic collapse in this recession. And that was a government-induced problem. It led the banks into the notion of entering these types of derivatives and all this other kind of stuff. We don't need to get too much into it, but blame can go around to both public and private.
Well, let's go to more of our callers, and we welcome Oren. Good morning.
Good morning. Look, the conversation certainly took a turn differently from what I originally called about, but I'm a self-employed carpenter and handyman, and I left the corporate world around 6 years ago, and I create work for myself, and I try to create work for people that I know in the community. I've hired homeless people. I've hired journalists out of work. But it's so hard with all the regulations out there. So here we are. How much should we regulate the banks versus how much should we regulate small business? And it's a tough line to ride, and I'll probably get investigated for calling because I'm an unlicensed carpenter and handyman, which I do everything by the book and by code and all that stuff. But anyway, it's very hard to hire people. It's onerous. The paperwork is onerous, and it's really hard to distribute the work, if that makes sense.
Yeah, well, and thank you for the contribution along those lines, Oren. I appreciate hearing from you this morning. I'm just going to go along to another caller and get as many of you on as I can. Arthur from Palo Alto, welcome.
Thank you very much. I think what we need is big structural change because our business income tax rewards companies that close factories and ships our workers overseas because they get to write off immediately the in-progress depreciation. Instead, what we need is a value-added tax that taxes imports that come in from overseas and refunds that tax on exports and rewards labor internally in the United States. And I think that's a much better system than what we have now in terms of taxation.
All right, Arthur. Thank you for your contribution. Let me go back to Michael Burnick here, because you were talking before about the whole system needing overhaul, and here's Arthur who calls in and says we need structural change and mentions that specific recommendation. But employers are also complaining a lot about their rates rising, are they
not?
Oh,
no question. The rates have risen in terms of what you're paying on each employer. And again, there are options to employers today. From World War II through the 80s, early 90s, the employer-employee relationship was the main form of work in California. Now we have the rise of various forms of contingent employment, independent contractors, staffing companies, professional employer organizations, and employers have choice. So the more you put taxes, regulations, the more they move away from employees to other forms of employment. And employers, I think part of rehauling the system to make it work for both workers and employers is the way we charge employers, the way costs are allocated. Right now, there are whole sectors of the California economy, including agriculture, that depend a lot on unemployment insurance and whose costs are picked up by other sectors.
And they complain about the paperwork and the regulations and so forth, as we've been hearing. Let's get you on. Clint, hi.
Yes, hello. I'm calling because I noticed that through the 80s and 90s, and especially currently, there may be more jobs coming up, but they're not nearly the high-quality jobs that provide us enough income or any type of benefits in order for us to support our families.
Certainly true, isn't it, Tom Abadi?
Well, the fundamental shift is that as manufacturing is misunderstood, manufacturing is the foundation for the middle class in America. It allows people with
– in a service economy that America has now become.
In the service economy. So, as we still have a considerable manufacturing sector, and the problem has been that we haven't realized the importance and the virtue of it. A lot of the jobs that were the best paying jobs were because you could create great value out of manufacturing. As you shift toward a service economy, it gets harder to do that. There are services that are great. Nursing and medical are some of the better paying and futuristic services. But the shift isn't happening fast enough. There's 15 million people out of work in America, and the shift isn't happening fast enough.
Well, on that note about the shift not happening fast enough, we will continue, obviously, to watch and see what's going on in the job sector. I want to thank Tom Abadi, staff writer for the San Francisco Chronicle. Thanks also to Jeffrey Jones from Hoover and Michael Burnick from the Sedgwick Law Firm. And thanks to Marie, who spoke with us earlier, and Lori Levy from California Employment Development Department. And thanks to you, our listeners. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.